Welcome back to Quick Bits. There is so much to cover from this past week and a lot that has happened in filings since I have streamed. We need to talk about the substantial amount of new charges facing Corey Richens in Utah. Alec Murdaugh is getting sentenced on April 1st, the day that this goes live. We need to talk about what's happening there and what his attorneys are fighting for. All of the new evidence in the Ruby Frankie Jody Hildebrandt case, plus lots going on in Rust, a new ruling with regard to Hannah Gutierrez trying to get a new trial, and of course, Alec Baldwin's attorneys dropping hundreds of pages of motions trying to get his indictment dismissed. So let's break it down for the Quick Bits. I'm legal analyst Emily D. Baker. This is the Quick Bits, where I break down just the main points of the pop culture and entertainment cases I'm currently covering on YouTube and the Emily Show podcast. Let's get into it. Corey Richens is the Utah woman accused of killing her husband by lacing a Moscow mule with fentanyl. Remember, after he passed, she wrote a children's book about grief and was in the middle of promoting that children's book when she was arrested. That case. She has a whole fleet of new charges in a new information filed on March 25th, 2024. She had been facing the murder charge, but is now also facing charges for attempted murder. The attempted murder charges are coming from a Valentine's Day 2022 incident where Eric Richens, the now deceased husband of Corey Richens, ate part of a sandwich and immediately broke out into hives. The new information indicates that he used one of his kids' EpiPens and drank a bunch of Benadryl, and then later told friends that he almost died, that he had broken out into hives immediately, and that he thought his wife was trying to poison him. What's interesting is during that incident, we learn in this new information that Corey Richens was texting what the prosecution calls a paramour on February 14th, indicating that she was headed to see that individual. But we also learned that she had bought a sandwich at Eric Richens' favorite diner, and that was the sandwich that he ate on that day. Also, shortly after the February 14th now charged attempted murder, we see prosecutors detailing that Corey Richens reached back out to her contact to ask for stronger fentanyl. It's going to be very interesting when all of this does finally go to trial. The day that Eric died, just a few weeks after that February 14th incident on March 3rd, 2022, we learned that Corey was also texting her quote-unquote paramour saying, "love you" with a kissy face emoji, which all of the information about whether or not Corey was having an affair is new information in these filing documents. Though it has been discussed, it has not been discussed in court documents until this filing. We also learn that shortly after Eric's death, his sister shows up at the family home. It is clear from that filing that that is the first time Corey Richens learns that she is not the beneficiary of Eric's estate any longer. That includes half of his business ownership, the home that they live in, which is only in his name because he bought it before the marriage, and a $500,000 life insurance policy. We also learn that there are other life insurance policies taken out on Eric Richens shortly before his death with forged signatures on them. But we also learn that the day Corey finds out that she is not the beneficiary, and we heard about this at the detention hearing, that she attacks her sister-in-law. Well, phone records indicate that she was texting her lover about that incident, and prosecutors put the entirety of that text into this new information, and it said, quote, "I lost it on Eric's sister finally and punched her a couple of times, angry face emoji. My brother ripped me off of her before it got too intense. She called the cops. It was at my own house because I told her to leave and she wouldn't. She said this is her brother's and she didn't have to. So I said, get out or I'll get you out." We know that Corey Richens has faced misdemeanor charges regarding that assault and is now facing sentencing on those misdemeanor charges because prosecutors are seeking to revoke her plea deal. But it's clear that she thought she was going to be the one benefiting from Eric Richens' estate. which makes a lot of sense when you see all the rest of the new charges, which include mortgage fraud, insurance fraud, and forgery. So that brings the charges that Corey Richens is facing in Utah now to 11 charges. And the prosecution in this new information has laid out a case of a very strong financial motive as to why Corey Richens might have killed her husband, as alleged by prosecutors. When this goes to preliminary hearing on May 15th, if the defense does not move to continue it based on these new charges, it's going to be very interesting. Alec Murdaugh has more prison time coming his way as federal prosecutors try to break their plea agreement with him, alleging that he lied to them. Of course, his defense attorneys are fighting this. His sentencing is set for April 1st, 2024. No, that's not a joke. That's when his sentencing date is. Remember, he pled guilty to 22 financial crimes back in 2023 with the federal prosecutors. This is before he took a plea deal to the state level charges with Creighton Waters in South Carolina. In South Carolina, he was sentenced to 27 years. Per his plea deal with federal prosecutors, it was agreed that he would receive a sentence concurrent or at the same time as the state financial crime charges. But that was based on him giving truthful information to federal prosecutors. They're alleging that not only did he lie to them in interviews, but that he failed a polygraph examination when questioned about exactly where the proceeds from the theft of monies from clients went. The feds are alleging that there is over $9 million of loss here, and they are trying to find where that money went. Federal prosecutors also filed all four of Alec Murdaugh's statement and the polygraph information under seal. The defense is fighting to get that information unsealed, saying that redacting it should be sufficient. The court ruled on that late on March 28th, saying that there is reason for the federal prosecutors to seal these entire documents, including ongoing investigations and information about others that have not been arrested, potentially committing crimes. It seems that whatever Murdaugh has said, there are others that are now targets of federal investigation because of their involvement with Alec Murdaugh, and the federal prosecutors don't want to tip anybody off. So ask yourself why Alec Murdaugh's lawyers might want this information unsealed. Is it in an abundance of transparency, or is it something else? I would love to know your thoughts about that in the comments. But the court ruled again late on Thursday, indicating that the prosecution met their burden to seal those documents, that they understood why the prosecution wanted to seal those documents, not to tip off anyone who is the target of an investigation, and asked if the federal prosecutors could file their documents with redactions, that those documents should be filed if it's at all reasonably possible. We will see if prosecutors file something that has everything redacted out of it, or if there is some information that they are able to share. And we should see that before Murdaugh's sentencing. But what's important in all of this, and really the thing that stood out to me the most, is that back on March 15th, the judge indicated in a note to the docket that they were already considering an upward variance on Alec Murdaugh's sentencing, higher than what the pre-sentencing report indicated, before the prosecution sought to break his plea deal. It will be very interesting what happens when this comes down to sentencing, because the defense is arguing that they need a full hearing before the prosecution is allowed to break their plea deal, because the court has to rule about whether or not the federal prosecutors will be held to that agreement. Speaking of folks that are in prison, Ruby Frankie and Jody Hildebrandt have already been sentenced in Utah for the abuse of two of Ruby Frankie's children. However, prosecutors in Utah released a ton of information in this case that had not been made public before. That included video and audio, photos, and Ruby Frankie's journal. And we went through that on live stream for over 5 hours, going through the documents that did not directly depict or pertain to the children. That included Ruby Frankie and Jody Hildebrandt's arrest video, the video where Jody got pulled out of her house for law enforcement to search while she was on the phone with her attorney, both women being arrested, their interviews with law enforcement as they were or weren't, because most of Ruby Frankie's reaction to all of this was to blink at law enforcement while she looked outraged that she was being arrested. And Jody also invoked her right to remain silent and asked for a lawyer, but not after indicating that she is a psychiatrist and that she normally sits on the other side of the table where law enforcement is. But what was most interesting to me is the jail calls from Ruby Frankie. Jail calls right after her arrest with her now estranged husband, Kevin Frankie, indicated that no one was surprised this happened. They were so calm on those calls. I was absolutely blown away that the response to her being arrested for the abuse of her children was to talk to Kevin about whether this had hit the news yet and to talk about being arrested with Jody, and that in the car when they were transported from the police station to where they were being housed, that Jody said to Ruby, "Trust you," which seemed to be an indication to maybe shut up about anything that you might know. And then Kevin starts asking Ruby, not about the children, but a bag of $85,000 of cash, and if police took that and where that money might be. And it becomes very clear that Ruby has taken money out of not just the family account, but all of the kids' accounts as well. And that money was in a bag of cash at Jody Hildebrandt's house. And law enforcement doesn't seem to know where that $85,000 has gone. Did it go to Jody? Did lawyers come and pick it up? Did law enforcement seize it? So it will be interesting to see if there is additional legal action to try to get that $85,000 back that Ruby had cleaned out of all of the bank accounts. They also released Ruby Frankie's journal, and it is largely redacted. The parts that aren't redacted detail the harm that she did to her children, her thoughts about her children, and more. It is truly heartbreaking. I did not read that out on stream, but I did talk about it in context with the other things we saw from these women and their arrests, jail calls, and other interviews. Again, it is a lot to take in, but prosecutors released all of that information to the public, so of course, we were going to chat about it. Hannah Gutierrez wants a new trial, and that motion was denied on March 29th, 2024. Her defense attorney was arguing that a new Supreme Court of New Mexico decision required the court to grant Hannah Gutierrez a new trial. The court disagreed. He also argued that Hannah Gutierrez should be released from custody pending her sentencing hearing on April 15th. The court denied that request as well and reminded the attorneys that the sentencing will go forward as planned on April 15th. Hannah Gutierrez is facing up to 18 months in prison for the death of Helena Hutchins after being convicted of involuntary manslaughter after a 10-day trial earlier this month. You know what I wasn't expecting to learn from Kevin Frankie's police interviews? Well, that Jody Hildebrandt stank. Like, bad. This isn't going to be a problem for you with today's sponsor, Lumi, because with Lumi, you've got body odor handled. Lumi Whole Body Deodorant delivers outrageous 72-hour odor control everywhere, from your pits to your feet and everything in between. In fact, it was patients' concerns about body odor that originally inspired the OBGYN who invented Lumi. And now, 6 years later, it has completely changed the deodorant game, and it will be a game changer for you too. But if you try the Lumi Starter Pack, you'll get to try all of my favorites. You get the stick deodorant plus the cream deodorant and then two products of your choice. Don't miss out on the deodorant wipes. They are really fantastic and easy to take with you on the go. As a special offer for our listeners, first-time customers get 15% off all Lumi products with our exclusive code. And if you combine that 15% with the already discounted starter pack, that equals over 40% off. Use code EDBQB, like Quick Bits, for 15% off your first purchase at LumiDeodorant.com. That's code EDBQB, like the Quick Bits, at LumiDeodorant.com. So try Lumi today and have body odor handled. Let's get back to this episode. Alec Baldwin is requesting that the court dismiss the indictment against him in this second charging in the fatal shooting of Helena Hutchins. Alec Baldwin's lawyers are already starting to bury the prosecution in paper and filed a motion that exceeded page limits with permission of the court, but also had over 700 pages of exhibits. Some of those exhibits were prior court rulings. Some of them were prior court filings, including the motion for sanctions against the prosecution that has not been ruled on yet. And some of it were exhibits, interviews, reports, and a full transcript of Dave Halls's plea proffer interview. It was quite a lot of information. The prosecution has asked for extended time to respond to it and has been granted that time. But we are going to see, I think, a continuation of a lot of motion litigation before Alec Baldwin goes to trial on the Rust case in July. There are some interesting questions in the motion to dismiss. For me, most interesting is whether or not the prosecution gave improper instructions to the grand jury. If they did, it can be grounds to overturn the indictment or allow the prosecution to take another attempt at indicting Alec Baldwin. But this case is not going to go quietly to trial. There is going to be a ton of litigation from Baldwin's attorneys, and we will see how the court and prosecution handle it. Yes, it is the same prosecutor from the Hannah Gutierrez trial, and I saw a number of questions on that podcast breakdown of Baldwin's indictment asking, how can Baldwin be charged and stand trial for the same crime that Hannah Gutierrez has already been convicted of? More than one person can be culpable or responsible for the death of Helena Hutchins in the involuntary manslaughter instructions, as I go over with regard to dismissing the indictment. There are instructions that deal with who is culpable and whether somebody else is more responsible. So a jury could find that Baldwin didn't handle the gun well, but find that Hannah Gutierrez was the intervening cause to the death of Helena Hutchins and therefore acquit Alec Baldwin on those grounds. So the jury instructions, if Baldwin goes to trial, will get quite complex because there is room for a jury to decide, yeah, he shouldn't have done that, but it doesn't matter what he did. Had Hannah Gutierrez not loaded a live round into the gun, what Baldwin's actions were are irrelevant because Hannah's negligence and recklessness was the intervening cause that actually caused the death here. But the argument can be made by prosecutors in the reverse that had Baldwin not cocked the gun and pulled the trigger, that whatever Hannah Gutierrez did wouldn't matter because the gun never would have been fired. It will be interesting to see those arguments, but yes, both can be charged and both can be responsible in their own parts for the death of Helena Hutchins in this circumstance. And with that, I hope the quick bits help you get caught up on everything that I am covering. We have a lot of trial coverage coming up in the month of April. Do not forget to download the Lawnerd app to make sure that you stay in the loop with all of the coverage and the summaries of the coverage when life gets busy, because I know that it does. I will see you in the next one. You can stay up to date with everything I'm covering on our free iOS and Android app at lawnerdapp.com or search your app store for Law Nerd. And you can also follow me on social media at The Emily D. Baker. Remember, I stream on YouTube on Tuesdays and Thursdays. I recap all of that for you in quick bits on Monday. And of course, The Emily Show drops on Wednesdays. Thanks for being a Law Nerd.